Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Friday's UFC 207 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 1-2 on our premium bets for UFC on Fox 22 to lose 2.2 units overall. We also lost our one-unit free bet on James Muntasri. Back to the present, UFC 207 features a 10-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Friday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a welterweight contest between Alex Cowboy Oliveira, who is 15-3-1 with one no contest, taking on Tim Means, who is 26-7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Means, minus 140, the comeback on Oliveira, even money, and that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Make sure you guys check those guys out. And right now over at Five Dimes, it is currently Oliveira minus 115, Means is minus 105. So it opened near Pick'em with a slight lean towards Means, and right now it's still near Pick'em with a slight lean towards Oliveira. So a little bit more action coming in Oliveira's way. This is a tough fight. In my opinion, it is a true Pick'em type of fight. I mean, I think if it stays standing, obviously, Means has the edge. I mean, he's just that one of those guys that, I mean, has that killer instinct, is just mean and nasty with the strikes. I mean, he has that ability to finish. He's got power. Again, if he has somebody in trouble, he's the type of person that finishes the job as well. So Means is a tough guy to deal with, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. I mean, if he gets top position with his ground and pound, he can be devastating as well. He has a bit of a submission game that's not really what he likes to go to, but he has a little bit of submissions to go along with it. So Means is a pretty complete fighter, but what he does best is just finish people, knock them out, get them out of there. So on the feet, Means definitely has an edge over Oliveira. But what worries me is Oliveira is probably the better wrestler, the better grappler overall in this spot, and he will more than likely go for some takedowns. I think Oliveira on the feet could do some damage. Don't get me wrong. He's not a bad striker, but I think strike for strike against Means is not going to get it done for him. I think he's going to need to stick to his strength in this fight, which is try to do what most people that have some success against Means have done in the past, and that's get him to the ground and try to control him a little bit and just kind of grind him out. Possibly look for the submission over Means as well. Oliveira does have, even though, again, he's almost like Means as well, that's not their first go-to is winning by sub, but Oliveira does have that in his back pocket and possibly getting position on Means on the ground. He could finish it that way as well. So I think this is going to be a close fight. If Oliveira could use his ground, use his wrestling, he's probably going to win. If he doesn't, he's probably going to lose. It comes down to just that. So both these guys at 170 are definitely serious guys to deal with as far as, I mean, in the mix and as far as top 10, top 5 eventually potential guys. I mean, they could definitely make a run and make things interesting for sure. So both these guys are talented, outstanding fighters, but I have to lean a little bit more towards Oliveira in this one because I think it's going to come down to him using his wrestling, and I think that's how he wins.
When Alex Oliveira initially came to the UFC, I always thought of him as more of a kickboxer, a striker, mainly because of his performance against Gilbert Burns. But as we've seen, he is very similar to Cowboy Cerrone in his activity rate. I mean, nobody from Brazil has fought more often than him over the last couple years. Now, I wasn't a big fan of the way he addressed his last fight, where he came in just 6 or 7 pounds overweight against Will Brooks and then had a big size and strength advantage against him and then was able to win via late TKO. But now that he's moving back up to 170 pounds and hopefully staying there, he'll be at a more even playing field. And against Tim Means, this is also a guy that had a huge size in the lightweight division and ended up moving up permanently to welterweight. And so both of these guys have a lot in common in that regard. But Oliveira, even though he does come from a bit of a striking background, His advantage in this fight is absolutely the ground. He has been very aggressive with his takedowns in fights, and you saw that in the Will Brooks fight, where he was actually able to take down Will Brooks four times. I know he was aided by the fact that Brooks had a bit of a rib issue, but that was really impressive. Same thing in the James Muntastri fight. He had picked up two more takedowns in that fight, helped him win a really one-sided unanimous decision. And he's been very aggressive with his takedowns in other fights as well. You look at against KJ Nunes, he had three more takedowns. You look against Joe Merritt, five takedowns. So Alex Oliveira has really kind of turned to the grappling side of things, and it's been working out really well for him. The only times it hasn't worked out has been against really, really talented grapplers like Donald Cerrone and Gilbert Burns, who were able to eventually submit him. Now, against Tim Means, I don't see Tim Means submitting him. If Alex Oliveira gets on top of Means, I can just see Oliveira grinding this out. I don't know if he can get a finish, but I can see him winning a decision. That being said, if Tim Means makes Alex Oliveira really work for those takedowns, then Means has an opportunity here as well. Means is vicious on the inside. He has brutal elbows. He has good length, and he knows how to use that as well. But his Muay Thai is just devastating. And if Oliveira is not able to quickly drag this fight to the floor when he initiates clinches, Means is going to really punish him. And I can see that doing some serious damage on Oliveira as well. But that being said, I expect Oliveira to get the takedowns, and I expect him to stay in top position over the course of three rounds and either win a decision or potentially a submission. I don't know if he can knock Means out, but I could see Means knocking Oliveira out if he does not get those takedowns. But in the end, I'm going to side with Alex Oliveira. I just think his grappling and game planning is a little bit more consistent here. Now moving on to the first bout of the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we're staying in the welterweight division for Brandon Thatch, who is 11-4, taking on UFC newcomer Nico Price, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Thatch, minus 380, the comeback on Price at plus 260. There's been a big drop. Right now it's Thatch minus 190, the comeback on Price is plus 165 at 5 dimes. So more dog action coming in, everybody fading Thatch. And if you look at what he's done recently, Thatch, I mean, he had all that buzz and hype around him when he first made his UFC debut, and he was delivering, man. A lot of people thought that this guy would be a contender in the welterweight division one day. It just, unfortunately, I mean, his fight with Ben Henderson started it all. He got exposed in that fight. He was doing pretty good early on in that fight, obviously. But again, Ben Henderson, in my opinion, is a true lightweight, even though he's, you know, likes to perform at welterweight or whatnot. I mean, the division for him, and he was champion at lightweight. So he faced a smaller guy, and that smaller guy ended up hanging in there and then took over the fight as it went. And you got to give him credit. But after that, it seems like it was all downhill, because then he gets stunned by Gunnar Nelson early in that fight, on the feet, actually, and then got choked out. And then, of course, Sire last time got him as well. So he's on a three-fight skid, but against three very solid competitors, all better than Nico Price. And it's going to come into play here. So I think a lot of people are just kind of throwing Thatch away, thinking, oh, this guy's done. He's passed it. He's not as good as we all thought. His chin is suspect. His cardio is suspect. He's just not that good. And we have an undefeated prospect in Nico Price coming in here with an 8-0 resume or record, I believe. And he's got most of those by knockout. So it's not a good matchup for Thatch. I mean, Price should be able to knock him out. And you know what? That is a very good possibility, but I think that's what's drawing more of the action in here. A lot of people are just fading Thatch to fade him here against an undefeated prospect that has a little bit of power. I'll get into Price right now, actually, to describe him a little bit better for those that might not know much about him. Price, again, undefeated. I mean, 8-0 resume against guys that aren't very good. I mean, he's fought a couple guys that are okay, but I mean, if you compare resumes, there's no doubt Thatch has a much deeper resume as far as quality competition goes. So Price hasn't really fought good competition along the way in his career thus far to get that 8-0 mark. But overall, he's a long fighter for 170. I mean, he definitely has some length on him. He is aggressive from opening bell, whether it's on the ground, whether it's on the feet. I mean, he's just a very wild, aggressive type of fighter. So he's definitely dangerous, because when he exchanges on the feet, he throws everything with power. I mean, he definitely is the type of fighter that goes for the finish right away. And he tends to get in those standing wars with people. And he does get a bit sloppy at times because of that. But if he gets in a standing just firefight with Thatch, I mean, he could have some success because Thatch's chin, again, is very suspect. So Price could land on there, on that chin and possibly put him out. Now, as far as wrestling goes, Price does also go for takedowns often. I mean, he's capable of getting them again against lesser competition. Thatch, I know he's been put on his back before, and I think that's going to be a way Price might win this fight as well, but I think it's going to be a lot more difficult than it has been in the past for him. So I think Price's wrestling still needs work. It's a weakness of his, honestly, overall. And I think that Thatch is probably going to be okay in that department. So I honestly think Thatch might be the better wrestler overall in this spot here, especially early on in this fight. So for Price, he still has a long way to go. I think he's still raw. He is getting better fight by fight, but he has to prove to me that he belongs in the UFC. So they're giving him a shot here against a guy that he could possibly beat the way he matches up with him. I just don't think he's going to get it done. I don't have a lot of confidence in Thatch. How could you with the way he's looked recently? But to be honest with you, if you compare the two, Thatch is the better fighter. So I'm going to go with the better fighter. Right now, I think he's just simply ahead in almost every area across the board. Again, I don't trust his chin. I know he's got some cardio issues as well, but I mean, compared to Price, I think he should be okay here. So that's why I'm going to pick Thatch to win. Now, as far as betting goes, I don't blame all the people that came in on the dog and fading Thatch. I would not lay it on Brandon Thatch for sure, but I still think he probably can win this fight, and he needs to bounce back and get this win. So I'm picking Thatch to win.
Yeah, watching Nico Price, I just don't quite think he's UFC caliber. I mean, he trains at a great gym, American Top Team, but watching his fights, he's sloppy. His defense isn't very good. His takedowns are one of the biggest parts of his game, and his takedown game is not that impressive. It doesn't look like he has a very explosive power double game. He just kind of leans over and charges forward. It's just nothing about him is that impressive. He doesn't have a ton of power. I don't think his submission game is that strong. So as long as Brandon Thatch isn't in PTSD from those three straight losses he suffered, then he should be in really good shape here. I mean, Thatch is ferocious when he's on. He has an incredible Muay Thai game. He has vicious elbows, brutal knees. And if Nico Price charges forward and tries to, you know, grab a clinch and close the distance and get a takedown, and if he doesn't get it immediately, Thatch is just going to light him up with the Muay Thai game. So even though Thatch isn't as good of a prospect as we all thought he was back in the day when he first came to the UFC and had those amazing quick finishes in his first couple fights, I still think Thatch has enough skill and devastating finishing ability to put away Nico Price, who seriously, at times watching him, he just leaves himself so wide open to just get blasted on the feet. And I just think that Brandon Thatch is going to take advantage of those openings. So I'm going to keep this one short and simple. Even though Price is undefeated, I think he's going to walk right into something and Thatch is going to put him out. So my pick is going to be Brandon Thatch. Now, again, sticking in the welterweight division, we have Mike Pyle, who is 27-12-1, taking on Alex Garcia, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Garcia -180 to come back on Pyle at +140. This line has stayed basically steady. It's -175 right now for Garcia. The comeback on Pyle is at +155. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in this fight as well. People are betting the dog here for sure in Pyle. I mean, there might be some value. Another one, we were talking about prospects not living up to the hype. Brandon Thatch is definitely one. Alex Garcia is another one. A lot of people thought this guy would be a title contender at 170. I mean, with his skill set, trains a good camp, obviously a TriStar. So he's got good training partners around him. The guy has outstanding wrestling. I mean, the guy's just a beast. He's got good power on the feet. He's got some skill on the feet. He's technically sound almost in every spot. The problem with Garcia is his chin is a bit suspect and his cardio lets him down at times as well. So his defense lacks in some areas. So that's what's been, you know, his, I think, Achilles heel in the past. I mean, it's definitely been not living up to expectations for Garcia with his performances. Of course, he's getting a fight now that he can possibly win. I mean, Pyle is 41 years old. The guy has put on some decent performances, even as of late. It hasn't been that bad for him. So he's going to be a test to Garcia because Pyle definitely has, again, the skill set. If you compare the two, I mean, if Mike Pyle was in his prime right now, I'd probably have no doubt in picking him over a guy like Garcia. But he really is not. I mean, even though he's had some decent performances, I mean, I think he still might have Garcia in cardio, which is amazing. But as far as strike for strike goes, I know Pyle has a little bit of length over Garcia, and he could be maybe problematic in the clinch area. But I still think that Garcia is the more devastating striker of the two. He's got more of the power. I think Garcia is the better wrestler. He's got to have to be careful because Pyle has a sneaky guard. Of course, we all know that as well. He's capable of submitting people. But I think Garcia should be okay in that spot. So I think it is a fight right now that Garcia should be able to bounce back and win. I mean, he needs it desperately too. He's coming off a loss to Strickland. Strickland looked great in that fight. Garcia hung in there at the beginning. He definitely made it an interesting fight, but you know, he didn't get the job done. And then he lost to Magny a couple fights before that. In between, he has a win over Zwick. So Garcia desperately needs to get back on track and be relevant in the welterweight division, where Pyle, in my opinion, is at the stage where we're not sure when he's going to retire. This could be his last fight, could be the next fight. Who knows? I mean, he's been in the sport for so long. You got to give the guy credit. I mean, he's still been able to keep his job, and he deserves it because of his recent performances, like I said. But that being said, I just think this is a fight that Garcia can bounce back. He could control Pyle on the ground. He could possibly knock him out. I mean, Pyle's always had a suspect chin in his own right. So I think Garcia's power on the feet, I think his wrestling can probably be enough here to get the job done, as long as he doesn't do anything stupid and get caught. So I do believe that Garcia is a rightful favorite, and I'm going to slightly lean with him. I think he has enough in the tank to beat a guy like Pyle, which should be kind of on the way out the door here. So I'm going to pick Garcia to win.
Honestly, this is more of a fade of Mike Pyle than a confidence in Alex Garcia. We saw Alex Garcia in his last fight earlier this year, where he started okay against Sean Strickland and then just had no answer for a jab, ended up eating too many shots, and then eventually was put away by TKO in the third round. Now, I could see that happening again if Garcia isn't able to get inside, if he's not able to get takedowns, if he's just stuck dancing around on the outside, because he does have that kind of stocky frame in the welterweight division. You know, he could get kind of Hector Lombarded by somebody. And Mike Pyle, while he's not a super technician, he is a very dangerous fighter. I mean, the guy still has a lot of knockouts in his career. He has a pretty solid overall ground game. He has a good guard. He has excellent jiu-jitsu. He does have some wrestling. So he definitely could still have some gas left in the tank. But obviously, if you go back and look, I mean, the guy, when he's not on, I mean, he is just getting hammered by people. You saw, you know, Jordan Meehan easily able to take him out. Colby Covington just took him down repeatedly for three straight rounds. Alberto Mina just dominated him with a round two TKO. So with his only win was actually a comeback against Sean Spencer, where he was getting beat up badly over the course of the first two rounds, and then caught Strickland in late in the third round, or caught Spencer late in the third round and put him out. And that was his only win that he's had since early 2014. Now, that being said, Alex Garcia isn't exactly the type of guy that can be known as super reliable. He has a lot of power. He has good wrestling, but he doesn't have very much finishing ability on the ground. When he's on the ground, he's mostly just laying on you, trying to stay active enough to win the round. On the feet, he can definitely take you out. I mean, you saw in his UFC debut, I mean, he was devastating against Ben Wall. I mean, granted, Ben Wall wasn't a world beater, but he just blew through him. But other than that, for the most part, he has not been very impressive on the ground or on the feet. Most of his wins have taken place because he was able to get some takedowns. He had, what, 8 takedowns against Sean Spencer. He had 5 takedowns against Mike Zwick. So that's what he's going to need if he wants to win this fight against Mike Pyle, I think, because Garcia just doesn't really have that ability to dominate you if the first round is over on the feet. So if Mike Pyle can withstand Garcia and then stuff some takedowns, Garcia could definitely be in trouble. But I'm a little more concerned about Pyle, the fact that he's 41 years old and coming off of another TKO loss, I think Alex Garcia might be able to catch him early, and if that doesn't work, I think that Garcia can take him down. So I'm going to pick Alex Garcia, but I am not confident. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 7-2 with one no contest, taking on Marvin Vettori, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Carlos Jr. minus 155, the comeback on Vettori plus 115. Another spot where it's staying relatively close to the openers. Carlos Jr. minus 145, Vettori is plus 125. So line margins have tightened here as well. Two-way action coming into this fight. This is a tough one. I mean, Antonio Carlos Jr., in my opinion, and another one of these guys that's, unfortunately for him, has not really lived up to what I thought was going to be a pretty decent run, even at, I mean, 205, 185 pounds since he dropped down, obviously, to middleweight recently as well. I guess that loss to Kelly really bothers me quite a bit. I know Kelly has done some good things. I mean, he just recently beat Kamosi as well. So Kelly's just not as bad as we all thought. I mean, especially for his age and his will to win and everything that you could say about Kelly. So it's not as bad of a loss now as we all thought it once was. But still, a guy like Carlos Jr., if you're a true prospect, especially with this skill set and ability, you don't lose a fight like that to Kelly. So that does stand out in my mind. I mean, he does have a little bit of quit in him. I don't like that. And fighters, obviously. So that bothers me here, even though this is a winnable fight for Carlos Jr. over Vettori. These guys have a lot of similarities, honestly, because Vettori is one of these guys he's a pretty well-rounded fighter, but he does like to really play things out on the ground. And that's exactly what Carlos Jr. wants to do as well. So Carlos Jr. should have the advantage. Overall, he's going to be the bigger fighter overall as well. He's going to be the stronger fighter. I think he can get some takedowns along the way, but will he withstand a guy like Vettori, which Vettori, in my opinion, has a ton of heart. His conditioning should be solid. I think he's going to be the type of fighter that has the will to win right now. I mean, he made his UFC debut and he made it successful, and it was pretty impressive for Vettori to get that W over Uda. But not just that. If you look back at his previous fights before that, I mean, you could really tell this guy's coming into his own. He's getting better and better. I mean, he's got a couple solid wins on his resume before the UFC as well. So Vettori's one of these guys. I think he's only 23 years old and he gets better fight by fight, legitimately better. So I think that learning curve for him is going to be tough to gauge right now, because I do think that he'll hang in there enough with Carlos Jr. to make this a really close, interesting fight. And as it goes, he might be the one that starts taking over the fight. And then possibly winning the fight as well. So to me, this is a tough one. I mean, again, my head says that Carlos Jr. should be able to get some takedowns over Vettori here and control the grappling exchanges. I don't think Carlos Jr. submits Vettori. I think Vittori's ground game is, again, legit. Maybe not as good as Carlos Jr., but it's legit enough for him to at least not get finished on the ground. Obviously, I don't think Vettori finishes Jr. either on the ground, so that should be kind of a wash there. I think they should neutralize each other out there. And it's going to come down to cardio. It's going to come down to activity a little bit as well. And I think Vettori, possibly as the fight goes, is going to be doing just that. He's going to be the one that stays a little bit busier, and I think he's going to be the one that kind of outworks Carlos Jr. to the point where he might even finish him late in round three. Again, not by sub, but possibly by strikes on the ground or whatnot up against the cage, or might just clip him. We'll see how it plays out, but I don't know. For me, I'm kind of on the fence with this fight. Honestly, I could see it play out both ways. I'm going to side, I think, with Vettori a little bit more. I like the fact that he has that will to win, and he wants to get better and improve himself. And I think for Carlos Jr., to me, mentally right now is a big issue. I know he bounced back. He had a solid win in his last fight over Gumaris, but still, I think there's question marks for his confidence, in my opinion. And I think Vettori is one that I have no question marks. I think he's a very confident fighter right now. So all that said, a close fight, I'm going to go with a more confident fighter. I think Vettori, again, probably maybe loses the early first part of this fight, maybe round one, and then starts taking over round two, round three, and wins the fight. So I'll lean a little bit more towards his way. I'll lean towards the dog Vettori.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Vettori does seem like a prospect with some good talent. You know, kid out of Italy, he had a nice run in Venator, picked up a win over a UFC vet in Igor Araujo, and then picks up a win over Uda in his UFC debut. But I think he still has a lot more to prove. He hasn't really been that impressive on the feet, watching him fight. And on the ground, that seems to be his biggest strength. And he kind of looks for takedowns. He tries to get top position, drop some ground and pound, and he does have, you know, a pretty good guillotine choke, as he showed with the finish against Uda. But if the ground is his biggest strength, then I think that he's just going to be in a world of hurt here against Antonio Carlos Jr. Now, obviously, Carlos Jr. has his own issues, as we saw with his loss to Paul Kelly, or to Daniel Kelly, when he, you know, just faded, gassed out, and then gave up, and Kelly was able to pound him out and get some unanswered strikes and pick up a TKO victory. But other than that, that one moment, Carlos Jr. has looked really good in the middleweight division. You saw when he dropped down, Eddie Gordon just completely dominated Gordon. He had a really impressive fight his last bout against Loleko when he... It was a very one-sided fight. He ended up getting 7 takedowns and then still had enough left in the tank to pick up a round 3 submission. So maybe he solved a little bit of his gas tank issues. Carlos Jr. is going to have a pretty good size advantage over Vettori. Not much, but 5 inches in reach is pretty good, especially considering Vettori is not a great striker. Now, Carlos Jr. isn't an amazing striker, but he does have some power on the feet. We've seen him hurt some people in the past, especially during his run on Tough Brazil, where he eventually would be crowned the winner. So I do think that Carlos Jr. has an ability to make an impact here in that middleweight division. And Marvin Vettori, I think, is a bit of a stepping stone. I think Vettori has the ability to stick around in the UFC middleweight division, but I just don't think his ground game compares favorably here against Carlos Jr. And the only way Vettori wins is if Carlos Jr. completely gasses and gives up, like in that Kelly fight. And I just don't see that happening again. So I'm going to side with Antonio Carlos Jr., potentially winning by submission. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a welterweight contest between Johnny Hendricks, who is 17-5, and Neil Magny, who is 18-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Hendricks, -130, the comeback on Magny, -110. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's exactly -110 either way. So open virtually a pick 'em in this. Right now, it's virtually a pick 'em as well. Now the line has been flipping back and forth. Magny was a favorite earlier today. Now it's again exactly pick 'em, and I'm expecting it to kind of go back and forth along the way until we see the fight actually play out. So I don't expect it to finish exactly pick 'em. I'm sure we'll see some heavy action come in one way or the other. So either Magny or Hendricks will be favored, but it'll be still a pretty small number out there for this fight. It's definitely an interesting bout. I mean, Hendricks was the welterweight champion. I mean, amazing how quickly things changed. I mean, and then he goes out there and obviously loses the belt to a very competitive Robbie Lawler. And that fight, honestly, could have went his way. So he could have probably held on to that strap along the way. But after that, of course, the Stephen Thompson fight just devastated him, in my opinion. I mean, he picked up a win in between against Matt Brown, but I'm saying the Stephen Thompson loss where he got knocked out and just Thompson just smoked him. I mean, he just went right through him. I mean, he looked awful in that fight, Hendricks. And then, of course, bouncing back, he suffered a decision loss to Gastelum, which isn't necessarily a bad loss. Gastelum and Hendricks match up pretty well together, and he was competitive in that bout. But that being said, we're not sure where Hendricks is right now. And Magny, of course, we all know, I mean, outside of his last fight against Larkin, which stylistically ended up being a nightmare matchup for him, this fight against Hendricks, I mean, Magny's faced wrestlers in the past, strong wrestlers that were able to take him down, and Magny's had extreme success against all of them. I mean, he has a win over Gastelum, which just beat him. You can't do the MMA math thing. You got to throw that out the window. And Gastelum actually started, turning up the heat a little bit as that fight went with Magny. It was a 5-rounder, of course. But that being said, I think it'll be another competitive fight here. I just find it hard to believe that, you know, I mean, Hendricks has dropped off that bad. We'll see here, I guess, this weekend with Hendricks and Magny how it plays out. But Hendricks does have that dynamite in his hands. He's got a ton of knockout power that I still think he has in his back pocket that people are forgetting about. And not just that. I mean, obviously, he has a wrestling advantage over Magny. Now, Magny's wrestling has improved to the point where he's done, again, really good against solid wrestlers in the past. Actually, has gotten top position and even mounted him in the past as well. So Magny is definitely game anywhere that the fight takes place. He's going to have an extreme reach advantage on the feet over Hendricks as well. And Hendricks' striking hasn't looked that good. So I understand why it seems like the majority of the public out there is picking Magny to win this fight over Hendricks. They've lost all faith in Hendricks. I don't know. I just think that, you know, Hendricks has fought some tough competition lately, as is Magny, of course, but I think that this is his fight to prove that he still belongs and he's still relevant. So for me, I'm going to slightly lean towards Hendricks a little bit. I think he still has a little bit left in the tank, and I think he's going to prove that here against Magny. Again, I wouldn't be surprised. Magny has been rocked. He's been dropped. He's been knocked out before. I mean, he usually recovers fairly quickly, but I think Hendricks could put it on him enough where he does wobble Magny and possibly put him out there. If not, Hendricks should be able to get some takedowns over Magny as well, and I think he probably does enough to stay out of submission trouble. So Hendricks, I mean, we'll see. If he goes out there and lays an egg and Magny just runs right through him, then he is probably is done. You can stick a fork on him and say forget about it. But for right now, I still want to have a little bit of faith left in Hendricks. I mean, again, former welterweight champion. He's been in there with the best of the best, best of the best. Not that Magny's fought any bums recently, but still, I still give him the very, very slight edge in this fight over Magny. So I'm going to pick Hendricks to win. Not a confident pick, but I'm going to pick him to win.
My main issue in this fight is how much does Johnny Hendricks have left? Now, obviously he's looked terrible in his last two fights, but in his defense, that was against two of the best guys in the entire division in Stephen Thompson, who might be the best welterweight in the planet, and Kelvin Gastelum, who beat Hendricks and then moved up in weight and beat a top 10 middleweight in his last fight by TKO. So, it's not like he lost to bums. And even his loss to Robbie Lawler to lose his belt was a controversial loss that could have gone his way. So, Johnny Hendricks still hasn't lost to somebody that would prove that he's not worthy of being a top 10 fighter. But this fight might be the one that puts me over the edge. Now, Hendricks obviously has a ton of power in his left hand. He's a former multiple-time national champion wrestler, and he has used that wrestling to his advantage to win fights. You saw it with his repeated takedowns against Carlos Condit to win a decision. You saw it with his takedowns against Matt Brown to bounce back and win a decision. And if he can get the takedown game going, then I think that the door is open for a victory against Neil Magny. My main issue is Hendricks expends a lot of energy when he goes to the wrestling game plan, and Neil Magny feasts on guys that tap themselves out a little bit of energy, and then Magny just pours it on in rounds 2 and 3 and is either able to win decisions or TKO people just because they can't keep up with him. On the feet, Hendricks definitely has the power edge over Magny, but Magny is going to have 11 freaking inches in reach over him. And Magny's starting to use that reach pretty well. You've seen him start to pick guys apart with the jab, and then he can throw with some power. He has good volume on the feet. And Magny even picked up an impressive victory over Gastelum as well. So that is a huge, huge feather in his cap, probably the biggest feather in his cap out of all of his wins, even Hector Lombard. So if Magny shows up and is able to avoid getting blasted by that just devastating left hook of Johnny Hendricks, then I can see Magny pulling this out. It's just all about him staying conscious, because Neil Magny's biggest issue right now is the fact that he does not have a good chin, and at times his defense leaves something to be desired. So if Hendricks connects, I can see Magny getting put out, because Magny's been hurt or rocked by just a myriad of fighters throughout his UFC run and during his time on The Ultimate Fighter. But if Magny can weather the storm and then start to take over, I think he could embarrass Johnny Hendricks with his pace and pressure. So I'm going to side with Neil Magny here. It's not crazy confident, because you never know how Johnny Hendricks is going to respond to his recent poor performances. But I think that Neil Magny has what it takes to potentially stifle Hendricks' game plan. So my pick is Neil Magny. Now moving on to the main card, we have a flyweight contest between Luis Smolka, who is 11-2, and Ray Borg, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in this fight, virtually a pick 'em. Smolka -125, Borg -115. And right now, it is currently -130, I believe. Let me double check here. Borg is -130. The comeback on Smolka is +110. So a little bit more action coming in Borg's way. I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, early on, I opened at 125, 115 because I thought the public would lean a little bit more towards Smoka. And that was the case early on. Early action did come in on Smoka. He got bet up quite a bit there. I mean, there was like plus 155s out there on Borg if you got in at the right time with him. And now, of course, steady action, some sharp actions be coming in on Borg as well. And it's actually flipped the line. So a lot more people are starting to believe in Borg in this matchup over Smoka. I mean, Smoka traditionally, I mean, to most of us, he's known as being possibly the best grappler at 125 pounds. I mean, that's how slick this guy is with his length, with his submission ability, with his scrambling ability. I mean, the guy is so smooth on the ground. Of course, he suffered that, you know, submission loss to Moreno. He got caught in that choke. Credit Moreno in that spot, but it just showed like Smoka's not invincible on the ground. I mean, he is beatable a little bit there, but overall, he usually has the ability to dominate most of his opponents on the ground. And then even on the feet, I mean, Smoka has that length and he's got some striking ability to make life miserable for people on the feet as well. He's going to have a huge advantage over Borg as far as reach goes. He's going to be taller. He's going to be just longer. He's going to have, I believe, about 5 inches of pure reach over Borg. So he's got that advantage on the feet for sure. But that being said, Borg, in my opinion, is one of the best grapplers at 125 pounds, underrated as heck. I mean, if you look at Borg's loss recently to Scoggins, look, you can understand it a little bit, in my opinion, because Scoggins' wrestling is way underrated. I mean, he probably was one of the better wrestlers, again, at 125 pounds. Scoggins was able to control Borg, keep him on the ground, and, you know, didn't let Borg do what he does best. If you look in the past, every time Borg's been put on his back against, you know, wrestlers or whatnot, some of the competition he's faced before, he's been able to scramble out of those bad spots and get superior position and then end up doing his thing on the ground, which people cannot hang with Borg in most cases on the ground either. So he's been able to do that. Scoggins was able to shut it all down. Now, can't Smoka control or have that much control on the ground over a guy like Borg? I don't think he can. I don't think he's going to have the success that Scoggins did. I think if Smoka gets top position, Borg's going to be able to get out of there, reverse things, end up on top position, and then control Smoka a little bit better on the ground. So I believe that Borg out of the two is the better grappler. He is a superior, I think, jiu-jitsu practitioner of the two as well. Both these guys offensively can definitely get it done, but I think defensively, I would expect Borg to be a little bit better. I think Smoka can leave that neck out there. I think Borg can definitely take advantage of that and possibly sub him and finish him there as well. So I think Borg is the better wrestler. I think Borg on the feet, a lot of people probably don't give him much credit, but he's not bad. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He utilizes his kicks well. So I think he can hang with Smoka even on the feet. It'll be close. It'll be interesting, and it'll be tough for him to get around that reach, but I think he could do it. So if this fight plays out on the feet, it'll be close, and I think Borg will hang in there. And if it plays on the ground, I think actually it's Borg's advantage on the ground as well. So in my opinion, I believe that Borg is a better fighter, and I think he's going to win this fight. So at the current price right now, even at $130 or so, I still think it's the right way to go with Borg. So I'm going to pick him to win this fight. I think he probably either grinds Smoka out and wins on the cards, or he does find a finish along the way. He probably grabs his neck and finishes him that way. So I just think Borg has more ways to win this fight. I think he is a better grappler, and I'm going to pick him to win.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I just don't see the grinding part happening. Ray Borg is spectacular on the ground. I mean, we've seen it. He has amazing scrambling ability. He has some excellent submissions. He can hop on your back. He's opportunistic. But grinding, that just doesn't work for me. You don't really see him take people down and lay on him or push him against a fence and make them, you know, get tired and make them work. Ray Borg is more the guy that's just actively pursuing advancement of position. And he at times is too comfortable off of his back. You saw that in the Dustin Ortiz fight when Ortiz just kept throwing a lot of punches. Ortiz was very physically strong, was able to overpower him a little bit. And then you saw it especially in the last fight against Justin Scoggins, where Scoggins was really dominant on the feet, and then as Borg started to tire a little bit, Scoggins just took the fight to the floor, and Borg had no answer for Scoggins being in top position. And this is despite the fact that Scoggins has been very vulnerable to chokes on the ground, and he's been submitted twice in the UFC already. So I think Borg is still a little young in the game, and I think he could be in some trouble here against Smoka. Borg's stand-up is still a work in progress, and while Smoka isn't a world beater on the feet, I do think that Smoka's kicking game is better than anything Borg offers on the feet. So I can see Smoka having an edge on the feet, And if the fight goes to the floor, I think Smolka is the better wrestler. And Smolka is an excellent scrambler as well, as you saw in the Ben Wen fight, where he just repeatedly was able to get the better of the scrambles and then just poured on the ground and pound. And that is one thing Smolka does really well, is he strikes in transition extremely well on the ground. And he just was able to wear Wen out and then eventually put him away. And I don't know if he can finish Ray Borg, but I can see Luis Smolka securing top position over the course of this fight and staying more than active enough to keep it. And then I can see Borg throwing up a crafty guard and trying to catch Smolka in all kinds of things and then trying to catch sweeps. And I just think Smolka will shut most of them down and stay in top position long enough to win a decision. So I disagree with the current line movement. I think Luis Smolka has a really good shot of pulling this off. I think people are more just fading Smolka because of his loss to Brandon Moreno. And as we saw in Moreno's last fight, you know, the kid's really good. He knows what he's doing. And I think it was a little flukish, but Moreno is better than we all thought he was. So, Ray Borg is talented, but I think Smolka is experienced enough to win this fight. So I'm going to side with Smolka. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Dong Hyun Kim, who is 21-3-1 with one no contest, taking on Tarek Saffedine, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Kim -145, the comeback on Saffedine at +105. And right now, looking over five dimes, it's Kim -140, Saffedine is +120. So virtually the same. Line margins have tightened up there as well. Two-way action coming in on this fight. Seems like the popular opinion out there is Kim. I get it. I mean, especially if you look back at, you know, Saffedine has been a little bit shaky as of late. A lot of people think he's definitely on the decline. And Kim, even though you see some signs of it as well, he's performed and looked a little bit better as of late as well. So Kim is not, I guess, labeled as the decline type of fighter as much, even though Kim's 5 years older than Saffedine. In my opinion, that's a little bit surprising. It seems like Saffedine's been around for a long, long time, and he should be the older fighter of the two. But yeah, Kim has 5 years over him. So that being said, Saffedine is an old 30 as far as MMA years concerned, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But with all of it, how they match up stylistically, I mean, we know what Kim likes to do. On the feet, Kim's okay. He's got a little bit of pop in his punches and kicks, but he's a grinder. He wants to get the fight to the ground. He wants to pin you up against a cage. He wants to just make life miserable for you and get the job done on the floor more times than not. So he's a grinder that, you know, has the ability to just dominate fighters and control the tempo of the fight and dictate the pace and get the scorecards more times than not with a little bit of power to go along with it. Now, Saffedine is definitely the more technical striker on the feet. He's got a little bit underrated power. I mean, he's only officially knocked one person out in his career. But that being said, I think his power is a little bit underrated. He's got more pop in his punches than that. And if anything, if there's any weakness to Kim, it's been his chin. I mean, he's been knocked out three times throughout his career. All three of those were his losses, of course. So Saffedine could, if anybody, I mean, Saffedine could clip that chin and possibly put him out. I wouldn't be shocked that way either. And Saffedine overall as a whole, he's been working on his ground game. He's always been a technically sound striker. So he knows that he's had to kind of amp up his wrestling, his takedown defense to be able to survive in a deep, deep welterweight division. And he's done that. I mean, that's what's kept him relevant in the game. He's been able to basically sprawl brawl. He's got good takedown defense. He doesn't let people bully him around as much. But again, if you look back at his last fight, though, that wasn't quite the case against Story. Story pushed such a high pace. You know, again, grinded as expected, though. I believe Brian and I both picked Story over Saffedine in that spot. We kind of thought it would play out that way, and it did. Now, Kim's a little bit different, though. I think Story has a better chin on him. He's able to absorb some of those the punishment a little bit better than Kim. I think if Saffedine starts to let his hands go a little bit along the way, I think he could give Kim a lot of problems. So I think this is kind of – not that it's an easy fight, but it's an easier fight for Saffedine than Story was, to be honest with you, in that spot. So this is kind of a head-scratcher to me because I think Kim is just getting a little bit too much respect, in my opinion, and Saffedine's probably not getting enough. But again, with the injuries, with the layoff of how Saffedine's performed as of late – overall, I get it. I understand it. So for me, this is virtually a toss-up fight. I think I'm going to have to lean a little bit more towards Saffedine, though, as an underdog here in this spot, though. I think a lot of people, again, are expecting Kim to just basically push a higher pace and control the action. But I think Saffiedine is going to be able to find his spots along the way and probably get the job done here. If he doesn't knock Kim out, I think even the scorecards are going to be relatively close. Of course, you got to lean officially towards Kim a little bit more if it does hit the cards, but I think it'll be close enough with the state of MMA judging. As I say time and time again these days, you never know how that's going to play out on the cards either if it's a close fight. So I do believe that the underdog here in Saffiedine has probably a slightly better chance than people think in this spot. So I'm going to go with Saffiedine to pull off the slight upset win over Kim. I just think that he probably does bounce back here and get a solid win over a pretty respectable performer and or competitor, I should say, in Kim. And I think he probably does that and gets himself back in the spotlight a little bit. How much does Saffiedine have left in the tank? I don't know. I think his title run days are behind him for sure, but I still think he's relevant enough to win some quality matchups in the welterweight division. So I'll pick him to win over Kim.
And I definitely have to disagree on Tarek Saffiedine letting his hands go. I mean, since when has he ever really let his hands go? He's always kind of been the type of fighter that is too willing to pick his spots, more accustomed to throwing leg kicks from distance. He fights very cautiously, and I've watched him for years, and I can't even remember a time that he even hurt somebody on the feet. So going in there against Donghyun Kim, I think Kim is not going to have any fear. The only issue I have is I'm a little concerned that Kim might bring back that crazy knockout artist Kim that was trying to get on the highlight reels and win the knockout of the night bonuses, because he had that nice little stretch where he had two crazy knockouts over Eric Silva and John Hathaway, and then he tried to do it again against Tyron Woodley and just got absolutely destroyed during a spinning backfist attempt and put out cold in the first round. Since then, he's gotten a lot smarter. He's picked up two victories on the ground, against Josh Berkman, and then most recently, Dominic Waters, I believe. So Kim has definitely wizened up. He's gone back to his roots of that grinding judo style. Get in, get top position, use your size, use your strength, and just wear people out and put them away. If he does that against Tarek Saffiedine, he should be in great shape. It's just all about he needs to close the distance against Saffiedine without getting clocked from a counter, and he needs to get Saffiedine to the ground. Now, Saffiedine has shown pretty good takedown defense over the course of his career. He's at about 88%, but he really hasn't faced a lot of great wrestlers so far in his UFC run. Rick Story didn't really land a lot of takedowns, but he did stay in Saffiedine's face and used a lot of pressure. So that was a bit of a different style of fight than what I expect Donghyun Kim to bring, because I don't think Kim is going to just stand and trade with him. But I can see Donghyun Kim closing that distance, getting inside, and just frustrating him. For me, it's just all about whether or not Kim can close the distance and whether or not he can drag Saffiedine to the ground. Because if he does, Kim is so big and so strong that I think it's going to be very difficult for Saffiedine to get back up. So I'm siding with Donghyun Kim. I think that he is going to be too big and strong for Saffiedine, and I don't see Saffiedine clipping him on the chin on the way in, even if Kim's chin is worse than Rick Story's was. So I'm siding with Kim, not crazy confident, but I do think that that wrestling and size is going to be the difference here. Now, moving down to the bantamweight division, we have a number one contenders fight between TJ Dillashaw, who is 14-3, and John Lineker, who is 29-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Dillashaw -190, the comeback on Lineker at +150. Right now, looking for five dimes, Dillashaw got bet up a little bit. It's -235 for Dillashaw. The comeback on Lineker is +195. I get it. I mean, Dillashaw, in my opinion, should still be wearing a belt. I thought he won the fight against Dominic Cruz. It was a close fight, so not one that you could cry bad decision or whatnot about, because it was definitely a competitive fight. But I do think that Dillashaw won that fight, and I think he is the best bantamweight in the world right now. So Lineker coming off of an impressive performance over Dotson. I mean, you know, I haven't seen anybody make Dotson look like that in a fight, even though Dotson was successful. And I mean, as far as he had his moments in that fight for sure, Lineker, just that relentless pressure that he put on Dotson. And I mean, just that won him the fight, basically. Dotson was landing some clean blows along the way. He hits like a truck. We all know that Dotson has that speed and power that can do some damage, and Lineker just absorbed it, and he kept on coming, man. I mean, such heavy hands and such relentless pace that he sets on people, and his cardio seems to be getting better as well. So a lot of good things to like about Lineker, even at bantamweight. Even though he's undersized a little bit, he still performs the same as he was in the flyweight division. So obviously in that spot. Now, of course, again, Dotson was another guy that was a flyweight, though. Dillashaw here is not a flyweight. He is a true bantamweight. He's a strong fighter. He's going to be the bigger man here as well. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got that movement. Again, he's got that experience. He's got that confidence. He's got that swag. Everything you like to see in a champion, or former champion, I should say, in Dillashaw, he's got it right now. So this is a big step up in competition, even though he's had some pretty quality wins recently, Lineker has, on his resume. Dillashaw's still a step above him. And I think that's why you got to kind of side with Dillashaw. In my opinion, Lineker, I mean, that chin is just, what can you say? It's granite. I mean, it's definitely amazing, because he's been clipped by some really good, powerful fighters, and his chin is just held up. So it's going to be tough to get Lineker out of there. But that defense at times, I mean, he blocks with his face. Now, he's been getting a little bit better. He's tightened things up defensively recently as well. I thought he was going to get clobbered a little bit more in that Dotson fight than he did. So you got to give him credit there. He is making improvements that has been needed in his game, Lineker has. But against Dillashaw, I mean, he does have that knockout power. And again, he does have that speed and that movement, and of course the wrestling to go along with it, that Dillashaw is just the better fighter of the two. Can Lineker make this an ugly fight, maybe put some pressure on Dillashaw and possibly clip him? Yeah, I wouldn't lay the juice, honestly, in this spot, even though I'm going to pick Dillashaw to win, and I think more times than not he should get the job done because he is the better fighter. I still wouldn't lay 2-1 or over against a guy like Lineker right now. He's just got way too much power, and he's got too much momentum right now and confidence going into this fight. Not that Dillashaw does not, but I just think it's tough to lay 2-1 against a guy like that until we see him come back down to reality a little bit. And I think that probably will be this fight, but you never know, man. You cannot count Lineker out in this point, at this stage in the game, at all. I mean, the guy is on a mission, you know, to get a shot at the title, and it looks like even at bantamweight he could be that close. I mean, he wins this fight over Dillashaw, he's definitely knocking on that door. So interesting fight. I still got to lean towards Dillashaw. I do think he's the best bantamweight in the world right now, so I'm going to pick him to win.
And I have to side with Dillashaw as well. John Lineker definitely has a chance to win this fight. Anybody with the power of Lineker and the aggression of Lineker, if they can connect with the right shot, they can win any fight. And TJ Dillashaw has been knocked out before by John Dodson in that tough finale. Dillashaw has been rocked before by Hugo Viana, so it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility that John Lineker could connect with something just absolutely nasty and put Dillashaw out cold. It could absolutely happen. That being said, the advances that we've seen TJ Dillashaw make over the course of the last few years during his run to the title and then his run as the champion, I don't see Lineker comparing. Dillashaw has such good movement. He has excellent counters. He is very unorthodox with his attack. He comes at you from all kinds of angles. Now, it's not quite to the level of movement that Dominic Cruz uses, and he's not quite as much of a student of the game as Cruz, but Dillashaw makes up for that with power, with pace, with aggression, and with the ability to really put away opponents if he can start to accumulate. And when he smells blood, he definitely goes for it. There's no better evidence than in his fights against Hayden Barrow, where he just turned it up a notch and then took him out. So TJ Dillashaw is a very violent and dangerous opponent for John Lineker. And one thing that people aren't really talking about that much is the fact that Dillashaw has great wrestling, and if you go back and see some of his performances where he did not do as well in the featherweight division, it was because people were able to take him down. You go back, it was Ali Bagautinov had a great performance against him because he just repeatedly put Lineker on his back and kept him there and really frustrated him. And I could see Dillashaw mixing in some takedowns in this fight just to kind of throw a wrinkle against Lineker. And I can see him getting those takedowns. So TJ Dillashaw is a very dynamic fighter. He is just the more versatile fighter than Lineker, who I think is a little more one-dimensional. It's a very exciting dimension. There's no doubt about that. And he definitely does have the ability to end the fight at any moment if he can connect. But I do like that TJ Dillashaw has a aggressive takedown ability and the ability to put opponents on their back, and the fact that he can mix it up on the feet with a lot of movement and a lot of power behind his strikes. And I don't think that he'll be employing the exact same type of game plan that John Dodson had, where he was just dancing way too much on the outside and allowing Lineker to kind of dictate the pace and the aggression. So I favor TJ Dillashaw here. I think he's going to catch Lineker with a lot of counters. And while I don't think that Lineker is going to get knocked out, I think he is, he's going to be bleeding in this fight. And I expect TJ Dillashaw to walk away the victor. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have the bantamweight title fight between champion Dominick Cruz, who is 22-1, taking on Cody Garbrandt, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Cruz minus 195, the comeback on Garbrandt, at plus 160. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's minus 215 for Cruz. The comeback on Garbrandt is at plus 178. So right now, line margins have tightened up a little bit, and more action has come in on Cruz since the opener. And I think, you know, I'm not really surprised by it. It would probably go back and forth a little bit. It would probably stay around 2-1 overall. So close to the opening spot here. And I think it's fair. I mean, Cruz, obviously, again, he's fought the who's who. I mean, if you look back, he's even fought the likes of Demetrius Johnson, and he's got a win over him. He's fought Benavidez. He's got a win over him. I mean, Cruz has just fought everybody, including his wars and his, you know, his rivalry there with Uriah Faber, which, by the way, have been pretty competitive fights overall. I mean, including the last one, he deserved to win that one, obviously, over Faber, but still. I think Cruz, if you look back throughout his career, he's been in a lot of competitive fights. The times that he hasn't been able to finish the fight and, you know, get the fight rather quickly, like Mizugaki or whatnot, he's been able to – I mean, he's been in very competitive fights. The guys are – even with his movement, with his brain, with his IQ, I mean, that's one of the best things you got to love about Cruz. He understands the sport so well. That's why he's an amazing analyst, one of the best out there overall, because he studies the sport. He knows MMA in and out. He just – everything about his opponents, he dissects well. He's just a very intelligent fighter. Now, in my opinion, all that has helped him build him into what he is. I mean, he's got the obviously the natural ability to back all that up with his skill set. He's got the movement again. A lot of people are trying to mock his style because he's been so successful with it in the past. He's got really good, clean technical stand-up to go along with it. He's got good wrestling. I mean, he's just a very complete fighter. He's got a submission game on the ground. Even though he doesn't tend to use that offensive submission game as much as you'd like to see, he still has everything. He's a total package. So Cruz is definitely deserving to be champion, even though I thought, again, I mentioned the last fight Dillashaw beat him for that title. He's still right up there, and the guy has been arguably one of the best bantamweights ever since he's held that strap originally. So Cruz is the man, and he's the guy to beat. And Garbrandt, you wouldn't think, honestly, if you look at it, is Garbrandt the guy to get the title shot and win against a dominant champion like Cruz has been throughout, you know, the history of the bantamweight division? Shouldn't be the guy. But you know what? The sport's crazy. And I mean, a lot of people were saying Garbrandt didn't even deserve this title shot. And I honestly think he's got a chance to win his fight. So I'm going to go against the grain here as well. I mean, Garbrandt has speed. He's got that special type of knockout power that, man, he doesn't need much. It doesn't look like he's put much into his punches, but man, they land and they land hard. And he's capable of clipping people. I mean, and putting him down. He's showed that time and time again. I mean, and Cruz, the thing with Cruz is, I mean, he does have good defense. He's one of the best defensive fighters for sure at 135 pounds with his movement, but he can be clipped. I mean, Uriah Faber was able to drop him. I mean, he's been clipped and rocked in fights before. So I believe if Garbrandt touches that chin, especially these days where Cruz, in my opinion, even though he's looked okay since his injuries and, you know, his comeback here, he's looked pretty decent. I still don't think he's a fighter he was before all that stuff. So in my opinion, Cruz is on a little bit of a decline. And in my opinion, Garbrandt's confidence level right now is at an all-time high. He believes that he can knock Cruz out. I mean, and half the game is honestly a mental aspect. I mean, you can ask these fighters time and time again if they're mentally prepared, mentally confident enough. I mean, it definitely elevates their game while they're in the cage, and they could do some special things from time to time. I think you can't really get in Cruz's head, but if anybody has done okay with that type of stuff, it's been Garbrandt. I mean, Cruz didn't even think that Garbrandt deserved the title shot. And not just that, they've been going on with this crazy war with Garbrandt's telling me, I'm going to knock you out. And one, it's just been mental warfare at its finest, really, with Garbrandt. So you got to give him credit there. That's not going to win him the fight, but that certainly doesn't hurt his chances here. It's just a weird matchup, I think, stylistically for Cruz. It's just a strange fight overall. And I think Garbrandt, with his wrestling background and with his hand speed and with his knockout power, you can never count the guy out. So I really do believe that Garbrandt is going to come in here and put on a better show than a lot of people are expecting, and possibly dethrone the champion Cruz, and maybe ends it by knockout, his first knockout loss ever to the hands of Garbrandt, which wouldn't be that shocking. I mean, if you look at it again, Garbrandt's one of those special strikers. I know you can look back and see some of the guys he has not finished in the past, with one of them being actually not too long ago with Briones. I mean, he went to decision with Briones, and Briones was actually very competitive with him. So it doesn't make sense if you look back through. I mean, Cruz should win this fight, but again, this is a crazy sport. I believe Garbrandt actually matches up pretty well with Cruz, and I think we're going to see it kind of play out. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Garbrandt gets the upset win. So I'm going to go against the grain here, against the early betting action coming in on Cruz, and I'm going to pick Garbrandt to pull off the upset win and become the new bantamweight champion.
This isn't the same Dominic Cruz that we were used to, because he's better. I think you saw that with his return against Mitsugaki, when he actually got a finish, which is so rare for Dominic Cruz. And then he came out, and he, just the fact that he had an evenly matched fight against TJ Dillashaw should have proven a lot, because in my opinion, TJ Dillashaw is a top five fighter pound for pound. And Dominic Cruz was able to go out there toe-to-toe with him and have a very evenly matched, compelling main event. Just a great fight. And then, obviously, Dominic Cruz dominated Uriah Faber in that trilogy fight. And he's finally back here against Cody Garbrandt. And for me, Cody's just getting this fight too early. He's gone out there, and Garbrandt has put away most of his opponents, and he's looked great so far in his run to the top of the UFC. But to me, his best win is over Thomas Almeida. He doesn't have a quality win over a top opponent in the bantamweight division. Nobody that's fought for a title other than, say, Mitsugaki in the WEC like 8 years ago, if that even counts. He doesn't really have a win over a top contender, other than if you thought Almeida was a top contender. But again, he was a prospect on the rise as well. So Garbrandt just was, to me, a fight away from potentially fighting for the title, and he's getting thrust in here a little too early. Now, Garbrandt is talented. He's 10-0. He's undefeated for a reason. He has a ton of power. He has some of the best knockout ability in the bantamweight division. But other than that, I just don't think that he is on Dominic Cruz's level. Garbrandt is a little more hittable than, a lot more hittable than Cruz. Garbrandt does not have that well-roundedness to his game. I mean, he can mix in some takedowns, but he doesn't really have a strong kicking game. He doesn't really have great movement like Cruz. He doesn't have, that ability to just dominate and transition. Cruz will set up things, like five moves in advance, like a chess master, and pull them off. I mean, he catches people with takedowns better than anybody else, because, he has such great setups to his takedowns. It's not the athletic ability where he's just so explosive and quick that he can just power you down with a double leg. It's, he puts you in a position where you're going to be off balance and you're not going to be able to stop the takedown. That's how he was able to get those takedowns against TJ Dillashaw, something that, nobody really had ever been able to do before. I mean, it was super, super impressive. And I expect that Dominic Cruz is going to get multiple takedowns here against Cody Garbrandt over the course of the five rounds. If you factor in that Cruz has a tireless pace, and as long as he's physically healthy, I think Cody Garbrandt is going to have just a nightmare time trying to land that huge right hand of his on Cruz's chin. Now, Obviously, Cruz has been caught a couple times in the past. Faber was able to hurt him once. Dillashaw really didn't hurt him in their fight, but Dillashaw did land some shots. But I just don't see Cody Garbrandt consistently finding a home for his boxing. And I just see Cruz just taking away some of his weapons over the course of a 5-round fight and either getting a late stoppage as Garbrandt starts to fade down the stretch, or I can see Cruz just outpointing his way to a one-sided decision. So I'm going to side with the champ here. I think Dominic Cruz wins convincingly. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a women's bantamweight title fight between champion Amanda Nunes, who is 13-4, and the returning former champ Ronda Rousey, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Rousey, minus 280, the comeback on Nunes, plus 220. And right now it's Rousey minus 140, Nunes is plus 120. So 100% drop in the dog, which is a bit surprising to me, at least. I understand the circumstances of this fight. I know that a lot of people are questioning where Rousey's mental state is, but I did not think we'd see Rousey at a buck 40. I thought that around 2-1, a little bit over 2-1 was a fair spot. I mean, typically if you look at back through the lines, you know, with Rousey's history, she's never been really like this in a spot this low, especially in a situation like this. Obviously, she's never been coming off a devastating career changing type of loss though either. So, I mean, just a lot of respect going in on Nunes here, because Nunes has looked tremendous as of late. I mean, she's definitely a heavy hitter. One of the most devastating strikers, obviously, in the women's bantamweight division. Her takedown defense is to the point where it's pretty solid. Overall, she's not an easy girl to get down. And then obviously, if you can't get her down, she has the advantage on the feet. Now, of course, cardio conditioning, all that stuff comes into play with Nunes. That's her kryptonite a little bit, but she's showed that she's pretty strong for the first couple rounds, at least. I mean, especially in round one. So Rousey's going to have her hands full, I guess, with all the mental aspects of the game and everything that she's had to face with her time off, with her kind of ducking the media or whatnot, kind of hiding out. A lot of people think that Rousey's pretty much done. I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. I think she's going to be motivated. She knows she has a dangerous opponent in Nunes that she's stepping in here with. And I mean, let's not forget how special Rousey was. I understand that loss to Holm was devastating for sure. I mean, just kind of a head scratcher the way it all went down. But that being said, Rousey was a dominant champion before that. I mean, one of the most dominant champions ever in the history of the sport. So to see her lose a fight and then everybody just kind of counter out is just amazing to me, really. But that being said, this is a tough matchup. I mean, stylistically it is. If she cannot get Nunes to the ground, Rousey could be in some serious trouble here. I mean, Nunes does hit hard. I mean, if she thought Holly Holm hit her hard, just wait till Nunes starts landing on her. It's going to be a whole different world. So yes, Rousey can lose this fight, and she could lose this fight early, especially if she doesn't have success getting the fight to the ground. Nunes could probably knock her out, but if she weathers that early storm and gets this fight into deeper waters a little bit, which is kind of unlikely for Rousey because she's the one that usually wins fairly quickly in most of her fights, obviously. I mean, most people, if you get a Rousey line, it's always under 1.5 rounds. Even this one is here as well, because Rousey's the one that just dominates her competition. So I don't expect this fight to play out that long. I think either Rousey gets her to the ground and finishes Nunes on the ground, or she's not able to and she might get lit up on the feet, knocked out. But let's not forget, there's one little factor on the feet that we're forgetting. Rousey has power. I know that, again, a lot of people aren't respecting her stand-up game. I mean, her coach, her training, all that stuff can be said. And yes, I get it. I understand it. She's not going to be technically better than Nunes on the feet, but she does pack a punch. I mean, she does have that one punch type of knockout power in her own right. So let's not forget that. So Rousey has enough power that if they exchange on the feet, it should benefit Nunes in most cases. But Rousey has enough power to put anybody to sleep, I think, also in the bantamweight division. I mean, she stunned Holly Holm in that loss as well. Let's not forget that. I mean, to the point where Holm actually had to hurry up and try to get her down to the floor because she was rattled so bad. So Rousey has that devastating knockout power. Obviously, she has that great judo background where she's able to get most people to the ground. And then once on the ground, I mean, it's a wrap with her arm bars and with her submission skill overall. So Rousey by submission or Nunes basically by KO is probably how it's going to play out. I'm going to go against the grain here as well. Everybody seems to be banking on Nunes coming away with a win here and knocking Rousey out. They expect Rousey to be done. And then after this fight, kind of go out with a loss and then just kind of retire and get away from the sport. I'm not so sure. I think the Rousey, I know she said she doesn't have many fights left, so this could be her last fight, win or lose, or maybe another fight after this if she does get the W here. I know she's kind of coming to the tail end of her career, but I think she's got enough to prove out there. I mean, this is her spot. This is her chance to get everything back. And I think that Rousey realizes that she's going to have those nerves. She's going to have that pressure on you, on her. But at times that brings the best out of fighters that are special like Rousey. So I think that Rousey is going to weather whatever storm Nunes brings. And I think she does get the fight to the ground. And once on the ground, it's a wrap. I think Rousey wins this fight by submission like she normally does. So I'll go against the grain. I'll pick the slight favorite in Nunes. And the way the line's going right now, I wouldn't be surprised if it drops all the way to a pick 'em. Exactly a pick-em type of fight, but there has to be some action coming back in on Rousey. I mean, with her name, with her popularity, could be some square action, honestly, coming in, heavy square action that makes the line kind of climb back up a little bit more as well. Or it could be some sharp action, believing that Rousey could get the fight to the ground. We'll see how it goes, but I do expect the line to kind of bounce back up eventually at some point. But the way it's going now, I mean, it's trending down towards a pick-em more than anything else. But with all that being said, I do like Rousey to get the belt back and get the win here. I mean, if this was, honestly, not too long ago, Rousey would be a huge favorite over a girl like Nunes. Nunes has improved. I got to give her all the credit in the world. She's been putting in the work. She has gotten herself in this position because of all the hard work and her improvements overall, for sure. But I still think that she's just outclassed with a fighter like Rousey, especially what she does best, and that's on the ground with her armbar submissions or whatnot. So it's Rousey's fight to win or lose. She fights smart. She's able to show some toughness in this fight. She's going to probably win this fight. So I'm going to go with Rousey to win and become the bantamweight champion again. Then we'll see what happens after that.
And I completely agree that if this fight had taken place 2 years ago, Ronda Rousey would probably have been a minus 1,000 betting favorite. And just the fact that Rousey was upset and lost in her last fight by knockout just changes everything. Ronda Rousey was this unstoppable force in women's MMA. Like, it wasn't just about if she would win, it was how quick she would win. Would her opponents even last a minute? When Ronda fought Holly Holm, some of my friends had bets on if the fight would last 30 seconds, between 30 and 60 seconds, or longer than 60 seconds. Those were the three bets you could place. And just, it's crazy to think that that's the aura of invincibility that Ronda had about her heading into that fight. But it's true. I mean, she was just so dominant. Now, obviously, that aura of invincibility has been shattered a bit. But don't forget, Ronda Rousey is still incredibly talented, a nasty, nasty threat in terms of power on the feet, and especially on the ground, where she just has that unbelievable ability to find arm bars from just about any location and just completely devastate her opponents. Now, Amanda Nunes, she is a very talented fighter. I will give her all the credit in the world. She has had a nice run in the UFC where even in all of her fights, she has had moments where she was completely dominant. Even her loss to Kat Zingano, she started that fight extremely well, gained top position, was just battering Zingano on the ground, but she didn't put her away and then started to gas, and then Zingano turned the tide on her and then ended up picking up a stoppage victory with ground and pound. So realistically, if Ronda Rousey's patient here, she could have a better chance at victory. Because Nunes does gas after about a round and a half. Nunes' fight against Valentina Shevchenko, she won the first two rounds, but then Shevchenko was able to win the third round. So there is a path to victory if Ronda wants to use more of a game plan approach. But if she goes back to her tried and true method of just bull rushing her opponents, closing the distance, trying to drag this fight to the floor, or just throw down, then she can still win that way. It's just she has to be careful because Amanda Nunes has fight-changing power in her hands. Her right hand in particular is devastating. She has immense knockout power there, and her hands are lightning quick. She has good footwork. She's able to sit down on her punches. She could do to Ronda with her hands what Holly Holm was able to do with her feet. So if Ronda's not careful and she charges in with her hands low, she could be eating some huge shots. If Rhonda isn't able to get takedowns, and she's forced into a stand-up fight. I don't expect Nunes to brawl with her. I expect Nunes to, you know, keep her distance, land jabs, and then look for that huge right hand. So Rhonda's going to have to be a little careful here. She can't just come in, you know, guns blazing, because that's what happened against Holly Holm, and she was charging face first into left hooks and jabs repeatedly as Holm was able to circle away from her. But that being said, Rousey still is dangerous. Even in the Holm fight, where she ended up getting, you know, dominated, she still rocked Holly Holm and had her in trouble with just the one big punch she landed in that entire fight. So if Rousey is able to get on the inside and land some big shots, she could still put Amanda Nunes out. So I wouldn't put it past her being extremely hyper-aggressive in this fight. I think that that's not the best approach just because of what can happen if she just waits it out and weathers the storm, this being a five-round fight and all. But overall, I think Ronda Rousey is the more dynamic fighter. I know that Amanda Nunes has picked up a few submission victories in the UFC, but all of her submissions have come when she hurt her opponent on the feet and then had an opportunistic submission chance where she just dove on a rear naked choke against Miesha Tate and Sarah McMahon. So I don't see her getting the better of any grappling exchange with Ronda Rousey. I just think Rousey is too aggressive for her on the canvas, and it would just end up with Ronda doing something crazy, finding an arm, and potentially tapping her out. So I think Ronda Rousey still has what it takes. I don't think that, you know, she's as invincible as she used to be, but I think this is a winnable fight for her, and as long as she doesn't walk face first into some huge right hands, then she should be the UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion when all is said and done this weekend. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 207. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Thursday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to a free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.